most of you know your yoga poses, you know, but what I'm going to teach you, some of it you may not have done before, so it might be slightly different and slightly unusual for you. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk to start with. I like, really like feedback and interaction. I'm an old school teacher and a teacher that likes to inform and exchange. And so as we're going through, if you've got a question or something you want to ask or something that's not clear, please ask. And this initial part will be a discussion as well as me talking to you. Ooh, that sounds good. Stop. So, firstly, there's Jasmine. I'd like to say thank you very much to Jasmine. Bless her heart. I met her, I've been coming here for 12 years, maybe 13 years now. I have two boys and they're third winters here. And as you might guess, well, you know, I come from England. And my husband's American and his mother lives here. So we ended up coming here in winters so that the children could ski and my boys are home educated. So I've been coming for several years and I can't remember, is it 2 years ago?
3 years ago.
3 years ago. That we met at a homeschooling group and we got talking. And I always avoided teaching when I came here because I do a lot at home. I do a lot of teaching at home and I also home educate my kids. And so this is my downtime. So Jasmine persuaded me, she was just about to open this wonderful centre and she said, come along. Yeah. And I came along. And before I know it, she broke me into teaching. So I've been teaching on and off when I visit and now and then. And it's been an absolute joy because it's been a real introduction to the community in Steamboat. And I knew the home ed community, but I really didn't have a network into the yoga community here, and Jasmine's provided this, and the centre's fabulous, and it's been wonderful, and she's been wonderful. And also, I'd like to say thank you to Libby and Manu for helping organise the workshop. Blessings on you all. That's great, thank you. So, let's move on. So why do we practice? Why do we do yoga? There are multiple reasons. Some people do it for health reasons. Some people do it. Well, initially, a lot of us are drawn to yoga purely because we want to do something physical and engage with our bodies in a different way. And that's fine. But why do we do yoga? Anybody have any ideas? I'm sure lots of you have ideas.
I do it to still my mind.
Yeah.
To calm my mind. That's one of my main reasons.
Okay. And how do you think yoga does that?
I think, well, the asana part of it, just by focusing on the poses, I can just tune into my body and then somehow that quiets my mind.
Yeah.
Well, it feels good.
Yeah.
He always says, delicious.
Oh, it feels delicious.
So that's another reason.
Yeah, it is delicious. When it's good, it's delicious.
Even when it isn't delicious.
In a different way, yeah.
It's a time I take from myself.
Yeah. Space.
I started to build the relationship with myself. And I think that it's huge. And my favorite quote is one of Oscar Wilde's, where he says that the relationship with yourself is a lifelong romance and is waiting to happen. And I love that. And I think that yoga has helped facilitate that, to build a relationship with myself, to understand the mind, the body, the spirit, a deeper level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I will add on to that. I was going for my CL, which you don't know what that means. That means it's unchanged subjective status during the Vietnam War. And I was doing it on personal moral grounds, not religious, so that's a whole other track. But I was going to the Society of Friends in Atlanta. And because I was going through an incredible life-changing experience, just in a lot of mind work, I needed something, and there was a yoga class there, and I started. So that was a long time ago, but I've always been able to come back. And that was a time of figuring out who what I believe in.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Anybody else?
It reminds me and helps me remember to breathe. Mm-hmm. And when I'm in a situation outside of yoga and I'm wanting to get out of it, I think of Lindley's making me stay in a headstand for longer than I then I can stay in it and just breathe through it, not run away from it.
Okay. Yeah, good. So there's lots of reasons why you'll be there, and to say one of them's right and one of them's wrong is not helpful really, but there are many reasons why we go to yoga. But I think that some of us find that we start with one reason, with one intent, and then we find it gives us a lot more than that one reason that we started with. And we all have to start somewhere. And I think ultimately that we live in a society, in the West anyway, that's becoming increasingly consumer oriented. And yoga is more and more about the way you look, how your body, what your body's like, how many tricks you can do, how many poses you can do, and the kit that you wear. And I don't practice a lot of fancy poses, and I definitely don't teach a lot of fancy poses. So you're not going to get a lot of fancy poses today. You might get a lot of stuff you've never done before, but I don't do a lot of hard or difficult poses, partly because I feel that people need to experience something specifically in a different way. And the reason why initially we all get hooked to yoga is really quite interesting physically in terms of our bodies. Well, this is a very recent development in the West that we've discovered, which the Chinese discovered hundreds of years ago, that we have these fascial bands in our bodies. And I'm sure you've all heard that word, fascia, and I'm sure most of you know what that is. Well, the fascia is a fibrous, and it's also a gel that surrounds all your muscles individually, so it pockets all your individual muscles, and pockets groups of muscles, and then it pockets, provides a barrier between your muscles and your bones and the muscles in your skin. So it provides a sort of, well, it's connective tissue. It provides a connection throughout the body in bands between your muscles, between your bones, and between your skin. And through those fascia, we get lots of little nerve endings. And in fact, a lot of the sensory nerve endings, and we have three times as many sensory nerve endings in our body than we do motor nerve endings in our body. So that pretty much tells you that our bodies are set, not necessarily in terms of motor sensing, but in terms of sensuality. So our bodies have three times more sensual nerves than they do motor nerves. Now motor nerves are responsible for actions. Okay, so sensory nerves are responsible for sensing the environment. They sense vibration, they sense pressure, they sense all sorts of things. And they're discovering all sorts of fascinating information about the way that these nerves work within the fascia and the way that fascia works. So your fascia actually runs, it interconnects in lots and lots of ways, but there are big bands of fascia, and they're the things that connect everything in your body. So when people talk about biomechanical body working and craniosacral stuff, that's all associated with fascia to a degree, because it's working with the whole body, the complete system. And your fascial bands run in complete bands, and that links what happens in the sole of your foot to what happens in your soft palate and the base of your skull, and the top of your skull. So, good thing you can try at home is you can do a forward bend, and then you can get a rolled ball and put a ball underneath your foot. Just try one foot and gently and slowly roll the ball from your heel to the ball of your foot and then back again. Very, very slowly, as slow as you can. Keep doing it for a little bit. Yeah, we could do it. I'll see. We may do it later. And then what you do is you do your forward bend again and see the difference between the back band on your body on the side that you rolled the ball on. It will have released and you'll feel completely different on that side. So that explains a little bit. There's just one example of how that fascia connects from the base of your foot all the way up the back of the body and up to the front. Now that line It's called the superficial back line. And it runs from your foot, up the back of your legs, up the center of your spine, all the way back over onto the crown of your head. So everything in that line, when stimulated, the rest is stimulated. And it's a beautiful system. And there's another example. Some of you will have children, and you might have heard said that if you release your jaw, your pelvic floor will relax. So, and you've often heard probably Libby saying classes, relax your jaw, relax your jaw. But when you relax your jaw, you ease and pelvic floor and the base of the body opens. Okay, so all of these things are interconnected. And the beauty of your yoga practice is that you can explore all of these things and see how they interconnect and see how absolutely phenomenally amazing these bodies are. That's a superficial thing. Okay, initially, that's superficially how our bodies work. But there's more to it than that. Because that fascial line, as well as containing these sensing nerves, those sensing nerves actually help you relate to your body and how it feels. Not only externally, but also internally. And so when you start doing yoga and you feel these lovely stretches and you feel this really lovely connection in your body, that's what you're feeling. You're feeling the fascial stretch in your body. And that's the initial thing that we're drawn to. But there's more than that. There's so much more than that. And we're going to explore how we illustrate that for our students, because one of the best ways of exploring or experiencing this or these depths to yoga is on our own mat and not in a class, which you may think as a teacher, oh, I'm just working myself out of a job. But actually, you're not. It's your students need you, but they also need to be informed as to how to have their own practice, how to own it, and have their own practice. Because it's like meditation. In fact, it's preparation for meditation. In that, when you have a meditation practice, you don't just go to a class to do it. You do it on your own. That's what you learn to do. And a yoga practice, ideally, is developed and fulfilled on your own mat. And that's where the true worth of yoga practice comes into its own. So what I'd really like to do is to give you some ideas. I'm sure most of you already know how to do that and already have a home practice. But what I'd like to do is to give you a sequence you may not be familiar with. And it isn't complicated. Well, it's complicated in terms of you don't know it. But it's not complicated in terms of you don't be wrapping your foot around your head or anything like that. But what we're going to do is work with it several times. And we're going to start with the very gross elements of the body, the very physical. So the first time you do it, we're going to see how this goes. I may only do it twice, I may do it three times, we may do it once. So I'm going to see how it works. But the first time you do it, we're going to focus on the alignment. We're going to focus on the physical body and where the weight should be and where your body should be. Now that is going to be different for every single one of you because you're all completely individual. And your arms might be longer than somebody else's, your torso might be shorter, your hips might be tighter, but that's irrelevant. We can all experience these things, whether we're tight or loose or whatever, it's irrelevant. One of the best yoga teachers I ever worked with was so tight. He was the most wonderful teacher. So it doesn't matter whether you can put your foot around your head. You can still get the experience. And it's not about anybody else in the class. It's only about you. Okay, but then the other thing is, it's not really about you. That's the aside. We'll talk about that later. So, what we're going to do is we're going to start with this very simple sequence. And we're going to focus on that alignment. We're going to look at the alignment and the focus on the alignment, which is how Inga set up his practice. The base was the alignment. Then we're going to take it a little deeper. And then I'm contemplating, but we may not do this, you doing it on your own this afternoon in this space. So there's a possibility you might have to remember this sequence, because I won't teach it, and I will assist you. Now, it's hopefully not going to take us too long. But we're going to explore a few things, but before we do that, I'd like to bring in this model here. And I mentioned to you, it's a bit tatty now, it's very, very old. And I made it 20 years ago, and it's, as you can see, it's a bit worn around the edges. And I did have a huge model that was like this, but it was layered, and each of the layers was this Vela board. That's what we call it in England. I don't know what you call it here. Mat board. And it flipped up, and it was on three chords. One was red, one was white, and one was gold, in relation to the shishumna, which runs through the centre of the body. And then each of those flipped up, and then you could see all the chakras. So this is a yantra, and a yantra is a geometric model. A mandala is a model that has representational images in it, and a yantra doesn't. It's purely geometric. It doesn't have representational images in it. This is a yantra. It's a beautiful yantra. This one is the Shri Yantra. The Shri Yantra is quite an amazing yantra because it's become a universal model throughout Asia anyway. It's used in Japan in forms of the Shinto shrines, but it's separated into two and they call it the Dino Mandala. It's also used in Cambodia, in various places in the East. So it's a universal model. It's a powerful symbol. And it has many interpretations and many layers and many levels to it. And it's quite complex. And in India alone, it's used in two or three groups, lineages. So they use it. They used to use it in Kashmiri Shaivism in the north, in Kashmir, which was a 10th century religious group, if that's what you could call it. And they used the Shri Yantra, but associated the Shri Yantra with the origin of sound, because Kashmiri Shaivism is very much about sound. And then in the south of India, the Shri Vidya use it, and that's still, it's still used. And actually, there's a Shri Vidya temple in New York, and New York State. And they use the yantra in a very different way. But it is a meditative tool, like the chakras are. The chakras aren't associated directly with the yoga practice, they're a separate meditative tool. And they're used to enhance a meditation practice and draw energy into the body. And the yantra works in pretty much the same way. Now, the way it's organised is quite interesting. If you can all come in, come on your knees if you can. You can get a bit closer and you can see it. If you need to, you can stand up. But let me just describe the rings. So this is the first ring, the base, and that's called the earth stretch. And that is all the very basic physical emotions. So all your, it's associated with all the basic physical emotions. But it's divided into nine rings. So the Shri Yantra has nine rings. So this is the first, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 being the triangle, and 9 being the bindu in the center. And I don't know whether, how much of you guys know about yoga philosophy, but they tend to refer to the body in terms of the gross, the subtle, and the causal. Yeah? So the gross is the gross body, that's your gross physical body. The subtle aspects are the energies that move through your body. And the causal is the thing that makes everything happen. It's the thing that makes us, its origin of creation. So if you want to call that a divine source, then that's fine. It doesn't have to be divine. It could be spiritual. It could be the soul. It could be whatever you want to define it as. So there are three levels. Now, in some practices, you work with the hardest first. You work from the causal back out to the gross. And in other practices, you work from the gross back into the causal. Now, working from the gross is a lot easier, but it's a lot longer. It's a lot longer route, and that's what I ended it. I chose to work from the gross body and work back to the subtler aspect.